Good evening, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is Guy Finley. Guy is the author of over 30 books and audio albums that have sold over 1 million copies in 16 languages. His ideas cut straight to the heart of our most important personal and social issues: relationships, addiction, fear, stress, anxiety, peace, happiness, and freedom, to lead the way to a higher, more fulfilling life. In addition to presenting seminars around the world, he has been a guest on hundreds of television and radio shows on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, NPR, Wisdom Network, and many others. He also hosts his own radio show here at BBS Radio called Letting Go with Guy Finley, which airs Saturdays at 8 p.m. I know that all of this touches the tip of the iceberg, so let's invite Guy out right now and say hello. Hi, Guy, how are you?
Hi, Lance, I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good. Guy, you began a life in a very successful show business family, and you knew many of the top celebrities of the day. In fact, you were, I believe, a songwriter for some of the stars. I'm curious to find out what caused you to turn away from a course which offered you so much assistance to seek something that was truly life-changing. And what was your life like as somebody who's exposed to so many personalities?
Well, Lance, really to make a long story short, I was born into a family. My father was the late-night television talk show pioneer before Johnny Carson and Jack Parr,
wow,
names that a lot of people don't know anymore, actually.
Right, right.
But this was actually in the late 40s, early 50s. Network television was just coming online, and it was mostly coastal, East Coast, West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad introduced people like Desi Arnaz and Lionel Hampton, Ella Fitzgerald, a host of people through what was the first sit-down variety show.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up as a result with my running mates as kids were the children of the Arnezes and the Martins and the Sinatras.
And
that was my, you know, that was my beginning.
Wow, I bet that was a lot of fun.
Well, you know, Lance, nothing's everything it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, true, true. We always see the greener pasture on the
other
side.
Yeah, I'm afraid
we
do.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, I was interested in music.
Mm-hmm.
I did spend a good number of years. My partner, Tony Martin Jr., and I, we were the first white soft rock artists ever to sign with Motown Records in 1971.
Wow.
I worked closely with Neil Diamond and Tom Catalano at RCA.
Mm-hmm.
And basically had a wonderful stretch of writing music, scoring motion pictures, and television programming.
Wow.
But was at a certain point realized that it wasn't what I wanted to do. It was not answering a longing that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And partially, just to tie the first two ideas together, the longing that I had was to find a way to understand the massive contradiction that I experienced growing up, where when you're around the people that most of the world looks at as being the royalty,
mm-hmm,
and you see that they are not royalty but wrecks,
yeah, yeah,
there's a very strange disconnect. And growing up with dysfunctional people,
mm-hmm,
which whether people understand it or not, most of us are.
Exactly.
And I wanted to know why human beings were so afraid,
mm-hmm,
and angry, because
mm-hmm,
fear and anger go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically in, I don't know when it was, 78 or 79, I quit.
Wow.
And I started traveling. I went around the world a couple of times to see if I could find someone. Back in those days, you were hoping that someone could take a peacock feather and slap you on the forehead and give you an immediate satori.
Yeah.
But after traveling as I did, I realized that a very important point, actually a turning point in my life, and that is that no one can do for you what you must do for yourself.
Oh, yes.
And I came back home not so much disillusioned as with a new resolution that if I was going to find answers to these things, I would have to do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one out there that was going to, whose foot I could dust with my forehead or who could slap me and give me some kind of shakti and change me.
Yeah.
And I did, and I came home, Lance, and the truth is it was one of those great experiences where by grace or fortune I happened to run into someone who said, you ought to go hear this fellow named Vernon Howard speak, and anyone with an American name had no panache for me.
Mm-hmm.
But as the fates would have it, I actually went and heard this gentleman speak and wound up from that weekend spending 14 straight years with him.
Wow. Wow.
Until he died.
Wow.
And when he died, he had given me some instructions. For those that don't know, Vernon Howard was a great American Christian mystic who, as far as I'm concerned, was one of the true luminaries. A great author in his own right, wrote endless books. And I had a wonderful time with him, learning from what he was and did more than what he said.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I started writing. Back in 1990, 2 years before he died, he told me that I should write a book.
Mm-hmm.
I started my first book, which was The Secret of Letting Go, which became an international bestseller.
Yeah.
And then when he died in 92, I resigned. I was the co-director of his foundation and moved up to Southern Oregon, where I kind of hid out for a year or two,
mm-hmm.
working on other books. Then I began speaking up here, and then little by little over the last, whatever it is, 15 years, I've been writing and talking, and the foundation, Life of Learning, has grown into a world organization.
Hmm.
And that's it. We're done.
Well, it was nice talking to you.
Thanks, Lance. Have a good life.
Now, the foundation that you just mentioned, what was that founded to accomplish, and what does it do throughout the world?
Life of Learning is a genuine nonprofit organization established basically to disseminate the works that I do in the most inexpensive way possible globally. We have a newsletter, for instance, that goes out to 142 countries that's free. We send about 4 million, I don't know how many it is now. We send an innumerable number of emails every month to these individuals who subscribe to this newsletter. It's free. And we basically work at trying to help individuals understand that we're not on this planet for the purposes that we were raised believing would fulfill us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And over that's basically it, Lance. It's just an ongoing work to help individuals begin to understand a different purpose for being.
Mm-hmm. You know, I see people everywhere feeling disempowered in all things, relationships and careers and abundance and everything, and then a lot of self-deprecation and, you know, lack of self-esteem. It seems to create a kind of victim mentality. How does your work approach empowering the individual?
Well, from a very different angle, Lance, than what would be considered popular or mainstream.
Okay.
To begin with, we are brought into a world in which, whether we see it or not, our mindset is such that we're taught that part of the way in which we fulfill ourselves is through the acquisition of certain powers.
Mm-hmm.
Power to be respected, power to have lots of possessions,
mm-hmm.
Power to win approval,
mm-hmm.
you know, be an authority. And what I try to help people understand is that the real issue here that continues to make us a victim wherever we are is the pursuit of power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that the discovery, if we're willing to go through it, isn't how to become more powerful human beings, but to awaken to what it is within our own consciousness that is rendering us powerless moment to moment. And that's quite a difference, because on one path, the common path, the one that has depleted the planet and basically turned individuals into power-seeking sycophants, is this idea of discovering my person through possession. What I'm trying to help people understand is that the reason that we set out to acquire these powers and gain these possessions is because there's something in us that naturally wants to know what love is, what peace is, what contentment is, and that these qualities, peace, love, contentment, compassion, that they are not things that we can grant ourselves. They are not a form of an abundance won through acquisition, but are a natural outgrowth of learning to be a true participant in life. So if I was going to qualify the difference, what I speak about is not the path of possession, but rather how we can begin to participate within ourselves in a life that is already complete. So that's the main, the divergence, you know, the path less traveled isn't trying to find a way to manifest abundance, to be wealthy, but rather to recognize that what we have within us does not need the kind of things that we are conditioned to believe we require in order to feel complete. Because, Lance, you know, look, when we start out looking for a way to complete ourselves, whether we see it or not, we empower the feeling of being incomplete. It's one of the things that's hard to understand, but no one who sets out, for instance, looking for strength recognizes that it's weakness that looks for strength. Strength doesn't look for
weakness,
you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
When we look for love, it isn't love that looks for love. It's a feeling of being lonely and incomplete. So when we set out from the wrong ground, from the wrong understanding, we empower these states within ourselves that make us victims regardless of what we win for following them.
That's right. That's right. Well, it seems like there's an awful lot of messages out there that teach us that we are incomplete, and that, you know, without this, you know, this new car or this new house or this new boyfriend or girlfriend, that we will never be happy. You know, and that how do we go about, I guess we can only change that on a on an individual basis. Is that, does that resonate with you?
Oh, yeah. The thing is that it isn't that we don't have abundant evidence in our own lives of the futility of our present path. Planet's coming unglued. And it's not coming unglued because of them. Planet's becoming unglued because everyone, you and I, to whatever degree it's true, believe that somehow or other our sense of well-being is intimately connected to what we're capable of extracting from one another. And it's just not true. Now, the fact is that we can and are intended to learn from our own sense of frustration, from our own sense of incompletion. Well, you know, there's a definition of insanity, Lance. And I think it goes something like doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that's what we do because, and we can dig in a little bit here. Because we don't know what to do with our pain, Lance.
Now we're getting a little deeper.
That's really the bottom line, is that we've never, it's not a part of our culture. Our culture, in fact, I think pretty much across the board, maybe for the last 100 years or so, 200 years, certainly with the advent of the Industrial Revolution, where we found increasing ways to expedite, ways to distract ourselves, that it's not part of our culture to look at our own unhappiness. So the answer for this chronic negativity is to find ways to avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the more we avoid our loneliness, our fears, our worries, the more we avoid our resentments, the regrets over our past, all of the things that haunt most of us,
mm-hmm.
the more we become the victim of a nature that promises us that the relief we're seeking is just around the corner,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what we call that corner.
Mm-hmm.
For some of us, it may be a bottle. For others, it may be becoming president of the United States.
Yeah, right. Good point.
And in the end, they amount to the same.
Yep.
Because nothing changes for the individual other than the way in which that he or she is able to avoid meeting what is essential
mm-hmm.
for us to meet within ourselves.
Well, we live in a country that's riddled with denial, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's the operative word.
Yeah.
And what I'm interested in doing and what I try to help people see is that the root of this unhappiness is in an unseen and consistent resistance that we have to life.
Mm-hmm.
And this resistance, you know, if those who are listening, look and see when you're negative, it's impossible. No one gets negative without first resisting a condition.
Yep.
So we have a little trail. If we're willing to work from the bottom up here, we can see, all right, look, I'm angry right now, or I'm depressed, I'm frightened. And if I look and I say, you know, well, what's this anger about? Well, something has happened. Now, it can be this something can be what you did, what they didn't do,
mm.
what took place a year ago as I'm thinking about it. And I don't want what happened. The minute that I don't want what happened, negativity comes up inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
The negativity consumes my attention.
Mm.
I become identified with what this feeling is that I don't want, and because you don't have a negative state without it pointing to something,
mm.
I become a kind of captive of what it is inside of me that is saying why it is I feel the way I do.
Yes, yes, yeah.
In that moment, Lance, I have been taken, I've had my power stripped away from me.
Absolutely.
Now, why is my power stripped away? Because I have been moved into a mind that believes it is experiencing what it is because of what it sees as the cause of it.
Exactly.
But what's really happened is that I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing because of what I have brought with me into the moment, period.
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize that every moment is literally a very unique mirror that if we were capable of looking at, we would recognize that it is showing me what I am and what I brought with me into this moment. As I'm speaking with you, for instance,
mm-hmm.
if I'm anxious or worried, if I'm looking, if in the moment I'm furious over something,
mm-hmm.
there is no way that this negative state would be upon me were it not for something within me that came with me, in a manner of speaking, into this moment, and now is insisting that things be different than the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
But Lance, things can't be different than the way they are in the moment.
Right, right.
They are the way they are in the moment to show me what I am in this moment. Not to punish me.
Yep.
Not to say I didn't make it, or I'm inadequate, or I'm not good enough, or I don't understand. It's showing me what I am so that I can do what the whole of the work that I'm doing is about, Lance,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially this, letting go of who and what I have been up until this moment. Because when I see that what I've run into is me, why would I turn to what I've run into to escape me?
Yeah, right. It makes sense to me.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like that.
And so here I am, I run into, and look, You know, today I was thinking about, I'm a little bit of a, I like golf, Lance.
Okay.
So when I can, I go out and I play. I'm not very good. I love the attention and the sport of it.
Mm.
But I've come over the 7 years that I've been playing to appreciate something. It doesn't make it any less painful when I make bad shots.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in training, Lance. And if you're in training, who's there to punish you other than something inside of you that believes you're greater than what you just did?
Right, right.
Well, none of us are greater than what we are in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Greatness lies within seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if I see in this moment I am not, and the reason I'm suffering over the moment, whether it's a golf swing or a miscalculated statement in an interview, an emotional rage or a fear that takes you over and makes you compromise yourself, you take a drink, you do a drug, whatever it may be, then in moments like that, there is something in us that we presently listen to and are identified with that would have us believe we're not supposed to be what we are in the moment.
Mm.
And I'm saying that we are what we are in the moment, and that seeing that what we are is what we are in the moment is a gift.
Yeah.
When we recognize that the reason we're being shown what we're being shown is so that we can let go of being identified with this self that believes it's superior to what it is experiencing.
Mm. Wow.
You see it?
Oh, yeah. That really cuts right to the quick.
See, and the beauty of that is in a moment like that, Lance, we fulfill really the purpose of life because I die in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I give myself up.
Mm-hmm.
So that something new can be given to me that I can't give to myself.
Right. That's always been there, that's right in front
exactly.
of
me. Exactly. It's there, but I can't see it because I'm too busy looking at what I don't want.
Right.
And
right.
figuring out how to escape it
right.
from the nature that doesn't want it telling me what to do, which
right.
it can't know.
Yeah, very good. Wow. No wonder your books are so popular.
Well, I think it's, you know, look, man.
This is good stuff.
The thing is, Lance, we all want to pretend that we don't suffer. I don't care who we are.
Mm.
And the fact of the matter is that suffering is understood properly is not a punishment, but a door through which perfection presents itself if we'll do it consciously.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But if I'm sitting and hating myself for what I couldn't do, when I never, or what my brother got that I didn't, or that I'm unable to speak my mind and heart clearly in a moment of challenge, then in moments like that, the answer isn't to resist what I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's to willingly embrace seeing that in the moment, what I am has come to the end of what it is capable of being.
Wow.
That's not the end of it.
Right, right.
Just the end of its present capacity.
Right, right.
So what happens is that we come to the end of our capacity and look at it as being the end of possibility.
Mm-hmm. When it's the other way around.
When it's the exact other way around.
Yeah. Wow. Hmm. Speaking about victim mentality, do you believe that one person can and does change the world, regardless of status, wealth, creed, and color? And do we all contribute to the changing of the world with our thoughts and beliefs?
The answer is yes, unequivocally, and yes, according to what it is that we're in relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's hard for us to understand this because, unfortunately, part of our, particularly Western, but it's now global. The global mindset is to have a hero. Hero Schmiro. That isn't to say that there aren't individuals who, through suffering, through sacrifice, haven't become a different order of human being and are worthy of admiration, not emulation.
Right, right.
The difference between admiration and imitation is that when we admire a true human being, whether it's the gas station attendant who goes out of his way on a cold day to do a little more work than is called for,
mm-hmm.
or an individual that's helped us recognize that we can transcend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But in moments like that, what we're looking at is someone who has done what you and I were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They have recognized that who and what they are is meant to be transcended, and that when that individual makes the willing sacrifice that's necessary to transcend themselves, they change everything because there is no separate self the way we envision it.
Hmm.
Would you agree with me, Lance, that, and this was in, I'm not sure what book this was in, it was one of my favorite, maybe it was Let Go and Live in the Now, but it doesn't matter. Would you agree with me that light, wherever you are, I'm sitting here in my little home here on top of a mountain in southern Oregon, I've got the light on, it's dark. Light here is the same as light anywhere in the universe, yes or no?
Yes.
Light is light. In fact, to be entirely accurate, the new physics says that the light here is the light anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
All right.
Entanglement.
Now, darkness anywhere in the world, whether it's darkness in the corner where a bug is here, you know, behind my library.
Yeah.
Or the darkness of what I have yet to understand about myself. Darkness anywhere is the same as darkness everywhere.
Okay.
One light, one darkness, the same everywhere.
Hmm.
Now, if, because a man or a woman one day looks out and they find themselves getting ready to go take a drug or take a drink or, you know, put another 4 hours in at the office because they don't want to go home and be by themselves.
Mm.
And right in the middle of getting ready to repeat some negative self-compromising behavior, they recognize that they've been doing that for millennia and that they can't do it anymore, not because they don't want to, but because they recognize it doesn't work.
Right.
And in that moment, for the first time in that person's life, the pressing darkness that was providing the solution that was really the perpetuation of their suffering is seen for what it is, and that is something that cannot change anything, but that merely increases and keeps in place the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
That person then begins to do what? They say, I will not, in spite of how bad I feel right now, I will not take part in this. I'm going to be aware of this darkness instead of its instrument.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, that person brings a kind of light into that darkness.
Yep, yep, absolutely.
In that moment, because it is a law that any darkness touched by light, whether it is physical or supernatural, becomes another order, that means that the darkness there is changed, which means the darkness everywhere is changed.
Ah.
Which means that any individual working on himself or herself to become a different order of human being. Now, I'm not talking about someone fantasizing, you know, some kind of spiritual, you know, I'm a light dancing on a lake, isn't this beautiful?
Right, right.
I mean a person who realizes they don't need to go buy something in spite of the fact they can afford it. Talking about someone who realizes that going and saying and having the last word in an argument doesn't change anything, but keeps in place the self that believes it has to win.
Right, right.
Whatever that case may be, where a person recognizes that something feels real, but the why behind is a lie, and they can no longer be a participant in that moment, they change the universe, Lance.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter whether the person's which is why I think Christ always said, look, when you pray, he said, you do it in secret.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be like the hypocrites who do it so that others see them and think well of them because they have their reward.
Right.
But instead, your Father that sees you in secret, he rewards you. This is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Where because I'm no longer willing to be anxious, instead of rushing, I sit and I allow the anxiety in me to do what it will do, and I won't be a part of it, and I suffer it until I see it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I said when I meant when we said we don't know what to do with our pain.
Mm-hmm.
We've been completely hoodwinked into believing that the only thing there is to do with negative states is to compromise ourselves, surrender to what they tell us to be and do so that they'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't appease fear.
No.
You can make it disappear by drinking it or drugging it or eating it or sleeping it or doing whatever you want to do, but the nature that produces it doesn't change until we recognize that we can no longer be a part of its life.
Mm-hmm.
Then we meet it, which is meeting a part of ourselves, Lance.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad part, just a part that we don't see. It gets me kind of... I get excited when certain ideas, you know, come up.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, Lance, is that I think the most exciting thing in the world is that that we're meant to be introduced to and bring the light of awareness into what we don't know about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what we don't know about ourselves, Lance, first of all, is infinite. But mostly what we don't know about ourselves are the parts of ourselves that we're afraid of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so as long as we live in fear of any part of ourselves, then we'll resist anything that brings that up in us, which means it isn't we choosing in that moment, but rather it's a default mechanism,
mm-hmm.
denying the possibility that we have to change not only ourselves, but the world that we live in by meeting ourselves properly.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, in the end, Lance, what else is there to do?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know...
Well, we've been doing the same old thing for 4.5 billion years.
Yeah, I mean, how long can we continue to believe that more of what didn't make me happy today is going to make me happy tomorrow.
And then when there's not more, there's better, and then there's different.
Which is why the planet is staggering.
It is. It is. Yeah. It is. Do you follow or support any of the present theories from the many sources which indicate that this is a special time of renewal and hope, and that there might be significant changes on or before 2012?
Yes and no, Lance.
Okay.
Yes, because I'm not because I believe, and I want to kind of stress this. You know, what did Stevie Wonder say about believing in things that you don't understand?
Oh, I can't remember the word.
When you believe in things you don't understand, he said, you suffer.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, beautiful words.
He said, superstition isn't the way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And just because, you know, 16 million people are circling around a growing common belief doesn't mean they understand it.
Right.
What it means is that they're imitators, deriving a secret sense of self out of belonging to a mass consciousness movement that in the end can't change a thing because it's not connected to the real changes themselves that are taking place.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of relates to what you were just saying about the denial of what is within us that we try to escape, and this could easily, for some people, be a part of the process of avoidance.
Yes, exactly. Now, on the other side, I have no doubt that there is a certain intensity taking place. A certain spiritual intensity. There's an increase in the intensity of life.
Mm-hmm.
Not a belief, but a direct perception.
Right, right.
And this intensity has one of two possibilities in terms of what happens to that energy. The energy can either be outwardly directed, in which case it becomes part of a circle of self that ultimately denigrates anyone and everything involved because the energy moves into entropy,
mm-hmm.
or, properly understood, we can begin to become more and more awake to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and begin the process of involution, which this energy is intended for those for whom it's intended that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's any question that we're at a very particular time in which, because of these increased energies, greater possibilities exist high and low.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think we're seeing more low than high.
It would appear that way.
Yeah. But here and there, now and then, you know, you hear about, you read, you see, you catch wind of. It could be a 12-year-old, Lance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You catch wind of this marvelous, oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
person understands something new.
Yeah.
And because of the way in which real consciousness is, that individual may be, you know, ahead of the curve, but the curve touches the whole of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So we see high and low, and then one very unique thing I think that needs to be pointed out, which is that you really can't separate the high from the low.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, perhaps many people don't think of it this way, but when you think about how anything of the light, what is it that glorifies the light? The light doesn't glorify the light.
Mm.
The light is glorified by the darkness that reveals it for being the light.
Mm.
We wouldn't even know Christ existed if it weren't for a certain set of circumstances,
mm-hmm.
a certain kind of darkness, a pervasive darkness, that wanted to crush that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was that that crushed it that gave life to it.
Mm.
It's quite whole, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
But we don't see the wholeness of it because we're culturally, religiously, traditionally conditioned to try to separate this light and darkness from one another.
And that creates a battle, which...
And then you get fanaticism and you get hatred.
Exactly.
And you get separatism. You get all of the horrific things taking place in the name of love.
Yep.
Love does not separate. It integrates.
Yep. Yep. I agree.
And it lives in us, Lance.
What are your feelings on organized religion?
Well, I think they've... Again, you know, if it weren't for organized religion being what it is, we might not be having this conversation.
Mm.
I was, without going into my personal history, I went, by the time I was 13 years old, I went through the three... I went through the four major religions. In school,
mm-hmm.
I was going to I was going to be bar mitzvahed, and then thought that that was the silliest thing. I'd never met the angriest person I ever met in my life was the rabbi. Then I went to be I went to Catholic school because I figured I'd better find something, and I never saw so much ridiculous pomp and silliness.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I was confirmed Presbyterian,
okay.
And saw one of the a psychopathy that would be beyond description. This is all at the age of 13.
Wow!
And then I went and became interested in Eastern traditions.
Okay.
And the point being that if they weren't as vacant and empty and meaningless in their form as they were, then I never would have left them to be able to come back to realize how rich they were.
Ah, so.
I mean that because it is. See, look, some of the most beautiful things in the world exist in the truth that gave rise to these things.
Right.
But when these things became when the form became the truth.
Yep.
Then the form then becomes just like bad Xerox copies over time.
Right.
And you get aberration after aberration
until
there's nothing left except for form and people that don't recognize the difference.
Right, right. And they're taking the form as the substance.
That's it. So you know, it's and then again, if you ask me, well, I think it's better that someone mechanically worships as opposed to mechanically hates.
Well, that seems like an improvement.
Well, look... At least this way, how do you say this? The best that any of us, how will I say this? Here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Every one of us, you and me, Lance.
Yeah.
We are doing, right now while we're talking, the very best we know how to do.
That's right.
And I don't care who the person is, they are doing the very best that they know how to do in the moment. Even a murderer. Now, when we recognize that doing the very best we know how to do means that we are acting from what we know to do, and gradually we see a disparity, so that somehow or other I know I can do better, it means that I need new knowledge. And at a certain point, mechanical knowledge, mechanical religion, these things, they cease to serve their purpose, because while they will mitigate for a while, I want to be a good Christian, a good Jew, a good Buddhist, but I'm a ravening lunatic on the inside, and I recognize, you know what, I'm doing the best I can, but what I am and what I know to do from what I've been given isn't enough, so something has to give. And it's at that point where something has to give that the person steps up, because now they're living from a new understanding.
Yeah.
One that they couldn't give themselves from past knowledge, but rather one that they've discovered on their own that wasn't an addition process, but a subtraction process.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Yeah, very good. Very good.
Then the person begins the real path, which ultimately is always purification.
Yes, yes.
And what is purification in the end, if not integration? When all of the dross is removed, and what's the dross? My past, who I am, what I take myself to be.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge, religious or otherwise. But it has its place.
And wouldn't that include lying and manipulating and all of that stuff?
Well, why do any of us lie or manipulate other than, at the root of it, fear of the loss of something that we think is valuable to our identity?
Right, right.
So when I finally recognize that the solution isn't protecting my identity, but rather uncovering something in me that believes I'm no good without what I imagine myself to be, then suddenly I'm on a completely different road.
Yes.
Then I see lying and manipulation and ambition and all the things that have colored my life not as being protectorants, but as being imprisoning factors.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and by releasing those and allowing them to go, as you see them clearly, it completely alters where you're coming from, which is changes from being driven by beliefs and old paradigms to being in the moment.
Yes, precisely. What I call the participation model. You know,
isn't it amazing how the universe unfolds its magic carpet when we're in the present?
Well, I never cease to marvel. I like to help people to see that somehow or other, Lance, you are the very center of the universe, and I am too. And everyone listening to us.
Right.
Because if we look at our lives, everything unfolds. This is right back to where we started, which is good.
Good.
Everything unfolds as it does. I say that lessons ride in on the back of events. And that lessons come to us for one reason, which is to teach us the truth behind those lessons. And the truth behind those lessons is to reveal to us that there is, if you will, a kind of curriculum, the purpose of which is to integrate us so that we become whole, loving, compassionate human beings that won't hurt ourselves and others. So if all of that is brought by a lesson, and I refuse the lesson, then I'm actually walking away from the possibility of recognizing that the universe was created just for me. Because isn't that... Look, Lance, how can you have, in any given moment, the exact lessons, which, you know, most of us have to go deep into a crisis before we finally recognize that we weren't being punished, but rather perfected.
Right.
But assuming that we can move up that time scale and close the gap between our, you know, lose the resistance and realize, how can this moment that is a lesson for Lance be that which only he could have used? Everything that took place, every event leading up to now, brought this energy to Lance, but somehow it brought the same thing to me. Now that's pretty darn miraculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. In your various program and working with others, do you encourage helping others and thinking about others, or do you also work with any kind of spiritual disciplines or techniques?
Lance, everything that I talk about, I can kind of summarize.
Okay.
Before you give someone something to eat off of your plate,
mm-hmm.
taste it yourself.
Hmm.
So that a lot better than being tolerant or being kind to somebody
mm-hmm.
is uncovering intolerance and unkindness in myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And recognizing that I can pretend until the cows come home not to be that.
Yeah.
And not only do I not change, but I perpetuate the myth
yeah.
that appearance is valuable.
Yeah, yeah, very good.
Whereas if I'm present to myself, and I call it the presence moment,
yeah.
then the very awareness of myself in the moment precludes me acting against myself, which means I can only be to you true. So I don't want to try to be true. I want to be true to myself, and then all else follows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's the number one thing, Lance. You know, wake up. Be present to yourself. Because if we are aware of ourselves, then even when we compromise ourselves, you know, I don't know if we have time to get into it, but when we, you know, when you know the story of Peter in the New Testament?
You could go ahead and share that if you want.
Well, basically, and for people that don't know, this is not a religious fantasy. This was a spiritual parable where Christ told Peter, saying, you know, I love you, I love you, I love you. You're the greatest thing in the world, Jesus.
Hmm.
And Christ looks at him and he says, Peter, before the cock crows three times, you're going to deny me. You're going to deny me three times before the cock crows.
Hmm.
Peter says, impossible. This is after they were coming after Christ, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter says, not a chance. And of course, Peter denies Christ three times. Somebody says to him, are you with that guy? He says, no, I don't even know him.
Well, yeah. Yep, yep.
Now, Peter really believed that the love that he had was real love. But it wasn't real love, and Christ was trying to help him understand that
mm-hmm.
by showing him that there is what we are, and then there's what we pretend to be, what we imagine ourselves to be. What we imagine ourselves to be can only keep itself in place as long as everyone else around us, including ourselves, plays the game.
Which most people do.
Which is all we know to do because we're afraid not to.
Yeah, right, right.
But when we realize that discovering our own weakness, this is what I was leading to, is the seed of strength.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Not protecting the weakness and feeling strong because I got people believing in me.
Right, right.
Again, the road diverges.
Yep, yep.
So when we speak of, you know, the proper discipline, we're really speaking of working to recognize increasingly that just because, in fact, I must make mistakes. I literally, you know who grows, Lance, spiritually? The people who are willing to love meeting their own limitations.
Oh, yeah, well, I love meeting my limitations.
Yes.
You know, when I see something within myself that even if it isn't pleasant, I've grown to enjoy seeing those parts of me that are weak, that are judgmental, that are this, that are that, and I embrace it because I'm happy to see it.
Because that's the only way it can change.
Exactly. Otherwise, like you have been saying all night, nothing changes.
Nothing changes.
We're just stuck in a hamster's cage.
That's it.
Fooling ourselves.
That's precisely it.
And
Lance and I aren't saying, you know, you'll see these things and you're going to go, oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see it. And the self that is the reflection of that ruinous part of you
mm-hmm.
is going to go, oh, my God, oh, no, this is horrible. But at the same time that all that's going on, you have a part of you that can recognize that what has just taken place was a gift
mm-hmm.
to you
mm-hmm.
if
Absolutely.
You'll receive it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it can happen all day long.
All day long.
You know?
and God willing, it does and should.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you, why do you think that some people rise to the top of their fields or in success when so many others seem to be stuck in traps created by their own lives? I think you've kind of touched on this question in many different ways.
Yeah, I think first we have to really identify clearly what it means to rise to the top.
Right, right.
I mean, there are millions of multimillionaires that have to drug themselves to sleep.
How about the top of the illusion?
Yeah, that's it. On the other hand, those who really rise to the top,
yeah,
they do it because they have love of what they do.
Right, right.
In the end, love is everything, Lance.
You know,
it's everything.
Yes, yes. And that brings up something that I see a lot of people doing. Many people are stuck in jobs that they do not like because they feel they have to keep staying with it to pay the bills. And they're not following their inner desires or aligning with their soul's purpose.
Yeah.
That seems to be a major obstacle for many people. They say, well, I can't leave this job, you know.
I speak at the Life of Learning Foundation 3 or 4 times a week to a group of students. People come from all over the world, actually, to the foundation. And today I was talking with a group of students, and I told them that I was thinking about writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's called How to Live Beneath Your Means. it's so extraordinary that we are on such a pace that we believe that our life is for the sole purpose of somehow or other stressing ourselves to death to achieve something that even when we attain it doesn't bring the happiness it promised.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Vernon Howard, that great man that I told you I met, he said, life is not a race to win, but a school for our higher education.
Hmm.
And when we start to recognize that our life is intended to be a ground of discovery as opposed to a proving ground, then what happens is the whole paradigm shifts, and we realize that, you know, what's more important here? Me spending my time trying to prove to my dead father, you know, that I'm worthy of him.
Right, right.
What is my life about proving myself?
Right.
Or is my life about recognizing that I am a unique creature with a very distinct way of being, a living expression of what is peaceful, divine, good, and true?
Yeah.
So that regardless of where I am, if I'm present to myself, that I carry with me everything I need to be all that I need to be in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't just words. It's a genuine possibility.
Mm-hmm.
that eventually, I think, when with enough pain, we start to recognize letting go is always the answer.
Yep.
And we start, and then we become interested, and our ears open up. And instead of being, you know, easily deceived by the pack of liars out there that promise you that abundance means that you're supposed to have, you know, 3 cars and a multi-million-dollar home, and that, you know, seek and you'll find all the solutions to your suffering through possessions,
mm-hmm.
that's abject nonsense. It's actually blasphemous.
Yeah.
To believe that who and what we are is on this planet for the purpose of having the most toys.
Yes, I agree.
You know, but not to say that there's anything wrong with possession, but possession must be in the right order in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the proper order is first conscious participation, and then allowing what we participate to give us what it does, because if we're really consciously participating, we already have a contentment that's eternal, that can't be taken
from us. Exactly, exactly. And it's independent of any of the externals.
Yes.
Well, you know, this has been a wonderful hour, and it's almost through. I could have talked to you for another couple of hours. It's just amazing to talk to. Would you tell us a little bit about what are your most popular books, and how can the listeners find you and your materials?
Thank you, Lance. Well, first, guyfinley.org, GuyFinley, guyfinley.org. Go there. Lance, on my website is a person can spend, and I'm not exaggerating, 6 months, 6 hours a day, and not expire all the free material there.
Wonderful.
There's a search engine that anything you want. There's MP3s, video clips, just an endless, endless array. You can sign up for this free newsletter. That's very helpful because once a week we send out a short idea that helps us remember what it is that we're meant to be doing on this planet. In my bookstore, you know, Lance, honest to God, we sell everything we ship in the United States, I think, is either shipped free or maximum $1.99. Everything's inexpensive. My books, The Secret of Letting Go is a great book to start with. A brand new one just out is 365 Days to Let Go, which is a kind of meditative journal that looks into how we can participate in this broader movement of life that we see, uncovering the seasons within us.
Mm-hmm.
Let Go and Live in the Now. Brand new audio album called Seven Powers. A wonderful audio album just before that called The Genesis of Love.
Mm.
So if you're interested in what we're talking about, go and find something. There's information on all the product that resonates with you.
Wow.
And take a shot. And if you don't like it, return it. And we return everything, no matter how long a person's had it. If they don't like it, we return it. So that's it.
Wow.
GuyFinley.org, F-I-N-L-E-Y.
Well, that's wonderful. From what you've shared with us tonight, I can see that this is definitely an area that will empower people and open their lives and give us something substantial to open up to what's real within and to let go of the parts that are not.
And you know what else, Lance? I speak three times a week, three or four times here. It's a $3 donation at the door. No one is ever turned away if they don't have the money.
Huh.
So, once every year during the summer solstice, there's an annual talks in the Pines where people come from all over the world. All that's at GuyFinley.org. Learn about it. Come visit us. Share in the work that we're talking about. And Lance, happy to be back with you anytime you want. I enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, I'd love to have you back. Like I said, it's like meeting an old friend. I mean, you're one of the few people that actually says something that really moves me greatly and that I agree with.
We are friends, Lance, even though we don't know each other.
And don't forget, you have a show coming on tonight, don't you, at 8 o'clock?
I don't know.
Well, I do.
Okay.
And right after my show, it's on Channel 3, though, I think.
Okay.
On Channel 1.
So. Thank you for the plug. I wouldn't have said anything.
So if you haven't gotten enough of Guy tonight, and he's just barely touched on the tip of some wonderful, deep, profound concepts, then he'll be on right after this show at, I think it's PBS Channel 3. Just check...